Chapter 20. Reacquaintances. There could be no mistaking. Kyrus Hinterdale was actually Brannis Soloran. Wendell had been on the first ship to land, but he had panicked and thrown on a false face before he had been recognized. He had been nervous enough approaching a neophyte sorcerer, but finding one he knew had spooked him.
"I need to talk to him. I cannot let caution deter me. I have to find him alone and introduce myself properly. It is Brannis, after all. How much danger could there be? I owe it to Jurgen to take on an apprentice to carry on his teachings, but I no longer need this Kyrus. He was a bad idea from the first, but he was all I had."
Wendell had not been blessed with as strong a source as his twin Phaelin. He had little recourse beyond simple trickery should he get himself in trouble. He had made a long habit of identifying and avoiding other twinborn. There were troubles with the knowledge of two worlds, and not everyone was so mild in their interests in the connection between them. Jurgen had told him tales about twinborn that set themselves up as warlords or gangsters, even just run-of-the-mill mercenaries. They used the skills they learned in Vaedras to act as hawks among the chickens of Tellurak. Wendell's skills were useful, extremely useful. But he would not be able to put himself on equal terms with a Vaedran sorcerer, should one be found on Tellurak.
"I should tell him about the boy. I do not need Brannis's twin as my apprentice, but I could have his help in securing the twin of Jinzan Thayer's son. It is in the Empire's interest that I get a hold of the staff of Galen, even if I must buy it with service in this world."
Wendell resolved to approach Brannis's twin and reveal himself. He took a long, shuddering, deep breath and walked to the door of his cabin. He put his hand to the handle, but the door would not open. His hand would not let him.
"But he is incredibly powerful. What if he does not care for what I have to say? He may want peace here, safe from the Kadran Empire and all the burdens he faces there. If he sees me as intruding, I could not imagine he would have any trouble reducing me to ash and sprinkling me over the ship's railing, never to be missed. I could not even report the crime to Warlock Rashaan without seeming a madman, and any vengeance would just as surely get me killed, successful or not. Brannis Soloran is too well placed to act against."
Having resolved not to cross the twin-born sorcerer with the mysteriously weak source, Wendell sat down on the edge of his bunk. He sat in stillness for a time, but soon found that his leg had been bouncing up and down, belying his nerves.
"I am being paranoid," he admitted. "He is Brannis Soloran, whatever he is called in this world, as surely as I am Phaelin. He will know me. He will share common cause with me. I might need to abduct the boy, and I could enlist his aid. I could get messages to Kadrus via him. He could arrange aid with no one questioning his authority or whence his knowledge came. I would be a fool not to take this opportunity for the gift it is."
Wendell stood again and strode over to the door, yanking it open before any part of his body took the opportunity to voice an objection. The plan worked, and he was freed from his prison of hesitation, for better or worse.
"You do look familiar, now that you mention it," Brannis replied. The wizened magician looked like someone he knew, but Brannis, for all his memory for the written word, numbers, dates, and magic runes, was awful with faces. Worse, Kyrus had never been one to socialize much. There were likely folk all throughout Scar Harbor who knew him by sight, but whose names the Scrivener had never attempted to learn.
"If you are racking your memory, let me give you a hint to jar loose any spare thoughts from the corners of your psyche. I traveled with you once, a few months ago, by horse. There were five of us."
Wendell knew that if that hint did not give him away entirely, this Kyrus Hinterdale was almost certainly not fully aware of Brannis. It seemed impossible how closely the two resembled one another, though. He had seen his own and Phaelin's reflections in enough mirrors over the years to know myriad differences, even before life extension separated their apparent ages by a decade or more. A cut that scarred just a bit, a shade deeper tan in the warm months. fingers calloused from working sleight of hand versus ones that did no work at all. Kyrus Hinterdale looked exactly like he had remembered Sir Brannis looking when last he had seen him. Brannis's eyes widened.
"Phelan?"
he guessed, sudden recognition spreading across his features. He looked the magician up and down. Wendell noticed now his eyes were drawn to the gray hair, the wrinkled features.
"Indeed. Here, though, I am Wendell the Wizard, worker of parlor tricks for coin. Phelan is off in Zorin at the warlock's behest, but here I have crossed paths with you, and only partly by coincidence," Wendell replied, glad that Kyrus and Brannis were aware enough to make introductions as simple matter of an exchange of names, with no need to delve into the mystery of the connection of worlds.
"What do you mean, partly?" Brannis inquired. Wendell knew for certain then that he had the right man. Brannis was ever one to pick out the bit to question, needing to satisfy his curiosity above nearly all other concerns.
"Well, I had heard of your exploits. I tracked you down hoping to take you on as an apprentice. Two things had been obvious. You were vastly powerful, and you were dangerously unschooled in magic. I am growing old, and I have a debt to repay my old master. I must pass on his teachings so that his legacy will live on. It seemed a long odds wager, but I had hoped to find a bewildered young sorcerer in need of mentoring. I had no idea it was you I was seeking out."
"Would that have made a difference?" Brannis wondered. Wendell marveled that Brannis's twin was so single-minded. There were 1,000 questions he might have asked, but he doggedly pursued his first line of questioning, and would continue until he had been answered to his satisfaction. He had overheard him do the same thing to Warlock Roshan, and had nearly laughed aloud as he twisted the slippery-tongued demon's words to get around Roshan's constant evasions.
"I think so, yes. I had even considered bypassing this opportunity, even after paying dearly for a ship to fetch you off that island. You see, twinborn are troublesome creatures. Not all of them are quite the same person in both worlds. Circumstance and the age they awaken, so to speak, to their knowledge, can affect how much they differ. From what I can infer, you are new to this knowledge, but if you do not mind me saying, you are the very image and equal of Brannis Solaran," Wendell remarked.
"You have no idea," Brannis thought, smiling vaguely enough that he hoped he gave nothing away.
"So why did you then?" Brannis asked. "There must be some reason. You must realize now that I have no need of a master. I have access to any resource in the Empire, with only a few limitations. I have even learned a trick or two from Roshan."
"Why would Roshan teach you spells? He must know you cannot cast them. What does he think it accomplishes?"
Phelan asked, ignoring Brannis's question.
"Well, for starters, I seem to have been able to move my source to the other world. You will find that I am not terribly capable as a sorcerer here now, and that I am quite a bit more so back home." Brannis's expression did not betray it, but he knew he had slipped in calling Cadrin home. He hoped Phelan, or Wendell as it were, had not noticed.
"Are you serious? I realize your source is weak, or appears so at the least, but I thought it a mere curiosity that it so closely resembled Brannis's shabby source. No offense. No, this is a jape you are having at me. I am too much the magician to take a tale like that at face value. You have some hidden trick to make your source look weak. I cannot see it, but I can do much the same when I need to,"
Wendell rambled, throwing up a wall of skepticism against Brannis's best plausible lie. It obviously needed work. "Would you believe that I worked a transference spell and managed to wind up switching places with Brannis?" Brannis ventured. Wendell said nothing. He just raised an eyebrow, crossed his arms before him, and shook his head slowly. "How about this one? I have no idea what I am doing. I cannot even see my own source. I have pieced together a few workable spells out of books from the tower's libraries, but I cause havoc wherever I use them. For the time being, just assume I am a non-sorcerer. I will not risk burning the ship down while at sea," Brannis tried.
"I can accept that one for now, I suppose, but I will get you figured out, not to worry."
Wendell winked at him.
Now, since I know you were just going to ask again anyway, I will answer your earlier question. I came to see you because I think you can help me.
With? Brannis pressed.
Wendell was truly a showman. Dramatic flair worked its way into his everyday speech, it seemed. He also drew things out, such as the pregnant pause he had just left hanging between them. I have found Jinzan Feyer's son, Wendell concluded, smiling as he revealed his wondrous news. Brannis seemed less than overwhelmed.
Do you need me to tell Rashaan or something? Brannis guessed. I did not know the boy was even missing. Is this somehow related to your search for the staff of Galen? Are you trying to kidnap the boy to trade for the staff?
Brannis could hardly disguise his disgust at the last notion.
No, not yet.
Wendell paused a moment to replay in his mind the order Brannis had asked his questions.
Yes, certainly not.
All right, then. What does this mean, and how do you think to involve me in it? Brannis relented, taking the bare, literal answers to his badgering as chastisement.
Well, first off, his son is like us, I have discovered. The boy hears voices in his head. They think him mad, but I was afflicted much the same as him in my youth. My old master Jurgen knew the signs and helped me separate the two worlds in my mind. I know where the boy is, and I intend to pass the gift along to him as well. It will be a better continuation of Jurgen's teachings than taking you on as an apprentice ever would have.
Very noble of you, certainly. How does this relate to the staff? Is this just a side project for this world?
Brannis was thinking up questions faster than Wendell could answer them. If there was some remote corner of Tellurak that was overflowing with answers because they had run short of questions to pair them with, Wendell suspected Brannis's twin would be to blame.
The boy stole the staff. He's been leading half the snoops and sorcerers of Zoran on a merry chase for days. He's been using it to kill folk who have tried to apprehend him, Wendell said.
But not you, Brannis put in, playing along with Wendell's drama.
Wendell appreciated the opening left to him to continue the story in his own fashion, without being sidetracked by yet another question.
No, not me. I bargained with the boy. I offered my help, Wendell continued. His eyes had an almost manic earnestness to them. I will get my apprentice in this world just as I promised. In the other, I will have the staff when he is ready to give it to me.
You are assuming that the boy keeps it long enough for you to win him over. Eventually they are going to catch him and get it back, I would think. You may have hours, maybe days. They could have it back now, for all you know, Brannis said. He did not like Wendell's plan, it was clear. And why not? It counted on a young boy with a powerful weapon outmaneuvering half a city's dedicated defenders. Like them or not, the Magrin showed every sign of being a competent people in the execution of their affairs, both financial and military. The plan was no certain thing.
A risk, yes, but it is the risk of getting the staff from him or losing it and having to try again. Weigh it against an attempt to wrest the staff from him by force or trickery, when failing means death at his hands. I will take the former.
I would also have your help, Wendell said.
And my part would be...
Brannis let the statement hang half-asked as a question, awaiting the final detail to be supplied by Phelan's twin.
I am an old man, and a poor one. I cannot buy his release from the refuge where he is cared for. I cannot take him by force. My magic might allow me to sneak him out unnoticed, but I do not wish to chance it. My best resource is my voice, and what words I can think to arm it with. I fear I may not talk my way around this problem. If I can, all for the better. If not, I could use the sort of help you might provide.
You need me for my muscle, is that it? Brannis scoffed. While Wendell could well imagine Brannis storming Pious Grove Sanctuary, he had expected to find Kyrus Hinterdale, noted scrivener and weakling, and possibly dangerously unstable witch. Seeing the brawny lad before him had come as a surprise.
So to speak, yes. We can work out details on the voyage there. I had not the time to ponder options that included you. I only just discovered what I have stumbled upon. With a bit of time to think, I am sure we can manage a solid plan, Wendell said.
So where is it that the boy is being kept?
Brannis asked, wondering where he might be heading, should he consent to accompany Wendell.
To Kalia.
The cards flicked through the air, once, twice, thrice around the table, until each player had their allotment. Stalyard's practiced wrist had sent them unerringly into tiny piles, around obstacles of coin and drink. Soria was immediately suspicious of anyone who showed such skill in handling cards. It was the sort of thing you saw from dockside grifters and back tavern hustlers. If she had thought upon agreeing to play that they were merely seeking to feel one another out and pass the time, she knew better now.
"Barkin' wonderful," Tanner groused, folding even before the communal cards were shown at the middle of the table.
Two of Stalyard's crew, whose names Soria did not care to learn, threw their cards down as well. The skinny one said nothing. The one smoking the pipe somehow managed to say even less. Stalyard threw in a small bet, enough to move things along but not seem a bully.
400 eccles, he said,
throwing in what seemed to be a proper amount. Soria was not interested in the accuracy of tiny sums like that. Zelisan scratched at his stubble as he studied the cards in his hand.
"I call," he said at length, tossing in a like amount.
"Raise," Soria said immediately. She selected a stack of coins and shoved it toward the pot without counting it out. It might have been 2,000 eccles, it might have been 2,500. She was sure it was enough of a raise to get the pirate captain's attention. The rest of the pirates abandoned their cards. Rakashi did nothing. He had not deigned to join the game. He disliked the pirates as much as any of them, but was less shy about expressing it. He would not share either table or games with them, given the option. Stalyard looked at her, studying her face. Most crackle players avoided making eye contact with an opponent who was considering their play, fearful of giving themselves away, whether bluffing, trapping, or merely not wishing their opponent to know whether they were trying any deception at all. Soria met the pirate captain's gaze, though, locking stares with him. The man was older than her and, by grace of years, had likely seen more hardened men in his day than she'd had the opportunity to meet. The dark brown orbs reached out to her bright green eyes and tried to force them to yield up her secrets. Her face was impervious to his scrutiny.
"I fold as well," he admitted after long consideration.
Zelisan followed suit, and Soria blinked away her ether vision so she could see her winnings. A shout from outside the cabin interrupted the game as the cards were being dealt for the next hand. Someone knocked hastily on the door, opening it before any response was received.
"A ship!"
one of the crew yelled to those inside.
"What sort of ship?"
Stalyard asked curiously, his dour, stern face resuming its animation as he was distracted from the card game.
"The best kind, sir," the man said, then grinned, showing a mouth half full of yellowed teeth. "Excellent. Signal our prize ship to hang back, then begin pursuit. I will be there in just a moment," Captain Stalyard ordered.
He took his tankard and drained the contents in one giant swallow. The costly Tikalish spirits went down smoothly for all their potency.
"Hey, sit your ass back in that chair, Stalyard," Soria commanded. "We are heading to Denku Appa. No detours, no distractions, no delays."
"My pardon, lady," Stalyard apologized. "I would only have assumed that you would wish to stop in the ship we saw. This is not a trade way, very much not. We are traveling very fast, so we would not have caught up to anyone sailing in the same direction as we. Anyone out here ought to be coming back from Denku Appa."
"What are you saying?" Soria demanded. "That you think Kairos might be on that ship?"
"It may be that some smuggler wished to be very much far from the places other ships go. It would not be the first ship to travel thus. But more likely, I think the ship returns from the island we are heading to. It may be a coincidence, but I would think you would want to investigate it, to be certain," Stalyard said. "And if not, you stand to take a second ship as plunder," Tanner offered. "Oh, no, that is not the case, my friend," Stalyard smiled. "We plan to take it for plunder either way. Everyone wins, you see."
Soria glared suspiciously,
but could not find a hole in his logic before having to relent.
"Pirates!"
came the call from on deck, loud enough for all to hear. The crew scrambled about the ship, changing their course and trying to find as much wind as the gods and spirits could provide. Few pious men took to life at sea, but devotion always peaked during storms and pirate attacks. Below decks, Wendell rushed to find Kyrus Hinterdale. Old and fragile though he seemed, sailors shouldered past him with all the concern shown a street peddler during a riot. The scent of panic hung heavier in the air than even the odors of sea air, sweat, and pitch could overcome.
"Kyrus, we have to do something. You have to do something,"
Wendell clarified upon barging into the cramped little space they had housed Brannis in. This was just the sort of thing that he hated about being so weak in the ether, being at the mercy of those with more strength of arms.
"Working on it," Brannis replied, rummaging in the trunk he had brought aboard with his possessions.
He heaped piece after piece of Liad's armor onto the bed until he had found all of it. Wendell looked on in puzzlement.
"This armor looks just like the stuff Brannis wears. Remarkably so. Where did you get this?"
Wendell asked.
"Just shut up and help me get into it. I can manage it on my own, but it goes quicker with help," Brannis snapped.
He stripped out of his tunic and breeches and began pulling on the ether-forged armor. Wendell seemed dazed as he handed pieces of the suit to Brannis and helped with the more awkward pieces. Every time Brannis donned a part of the armor, it shrank and sized itself to fit him perfectly.
"This is remarkable," Wendell said. You have copied it marvelously. How did you manage it?"
"Depends which version of my story you would like to try believing. Either I am a master craftsman and ethersmith, able to duplicate priceless artifacts of magic just a few months after learning to keep a light spell from getting stuck on the end of my finger, or I am an overly gifted fool with a poor enough sense of direction to get lost and miss the entire world I was aiming for with my attempt to escape Dinku Appa using a transference spell," Brannis said as he secured the demon-faced helmet to his head. "Have your pick, or worry about it later." He reached again into the trunk and buckled on his sword belt. It felt reassuring to have Avalanche at his hip, pirate attack or no. Wendell looked long and hard at him. The pieces were fitting too well, not just of the armor, but of the puzzle before him. And he was seeing a picture he had not been able to reconcile until he saw them all put together.
"Brannis?" Wendell ventured. "Is it truly you?"
Brannis nodded. "We can talk more when we have driven off these pirates."
"Wait,"
Wendell said as Brannis was about to head to the deck. "They might hit us with more cannon fire if you look too dangerous. That armor can stop grapeshot, I would imagine, but the rest of the crew will not be so lucky. If they board us without feeling threatened, you can better ambush them." Wendell's gaze swept about the tiny room, finding nothing remotely useful aside from the bed linens. He gave a shrug and tore them from the bed.
"You will board," Stalliart told Soria as they closed in on the outmatched merchant ship. Men were lining the rails of the Merciful, like dogs straining against their chains, waiting to be loosed on their helpless prey.
"If Kyrus is aboard, you will need to keep him from turning my ship into cinders. I will take you to where you need to go, but a pledge of safety must run both ways."
"No deal. You fight your own boarding actions. I will send Zell to look for Kyrus. He would know him by sight. I am not letting you put me off your ship until we have Kyrus with us. Tanner and Rakashi stay with us too. Neither would know Kyrus's face, and they are not here to bloody their hands for you," Soria answered back. Actually, she guessed that Tanner would be able to pick out the twin of the Grand Marshal by his face, but he had not known Brannis as well as Zelasan, nor seen him as recently. Tanner was just a middling officer, without regular interaction with the High Command. He saw the army's commanders in parades and atop podiums, just like the commoners. So Zelasan waited at the railing with no armor save for his helm and buckler. He was not a young man, and disliked the idea of leaping the gap between ships once the grapples had pulled them together, no matter how close they got.
Even in mild seas, the boats could sway together, crushing anyone who was caught in the water between them, or so he imagined, at least. Zelisan was not much of a swimmer to begin with. The ache in his injured knee made the prospect of plummeting into the Katamic seem more likely than normal for a man north of 45 and stout of frame.
"You turn sides this time, I'll gut you myself,"
Zell heard from near his right shoulder. He turned to see the mountainous man he had dueled with on the Frostwatch Symphony the day before. The threat seemed to carry more teeth in it when spoken from so close, with no armor to stop a hidden blade from sliding through his skin.
"Bah, mind your own backside, I'll mind mine," Zell grumbled in reply.
He watched as the merchant ship came closer, or rather as the Merciful gained on them. He reached up under his helm and grabbed the corner of a handkerchief that he had stuffed beneath it. Tugging it free, the helm settled properly onto his head. The world grew another dimension. His ether vision overlaid the world of light, disorienting him at first, as he adapted to the magic of the crown concealed within his helmet. He saw sources aplenty, from the strongest to the weakest among the crews of the two ships. The only one that stood out as distinct from the rest was Soria's, shining brightly among the rabble. A few, like Rikashi and Captain Stalyard, seemed more than typical as well, but nothing on the ship they pursued seemed extraordinary.
"Well, there is nothing but to see this out," he thought glumly. "But it does not look like they have anyone aboard with the kind of source that Kyrus Hinterdale must have."
It appeared that despite being an unarmed vessel, the merchant ship, bearing the name Fontenue, was going to try to repel their boarding. Crewmen had armed themselves with belaying pins and a scattering of blades, but there was one cloaked figure who stood out among them. His blade was a warrior's weapon, bared steel glinting in the sunlight, the ship's glimmer of hope. The man's bulk beneath his coverings suggested that he wore plate beneath, else he was the size of the hulking brute who stood at Zeld's side.
"Must have had some knight aboard as a passenger. Must have insisted on making a stand of it. Blasted fool is going to get good men killed when Stalyard might have spared them if they had given up."
Brannis stood watching, his makeshift disguise giving no cause for alarm as the Merciful drew to grappling range. It was not the fair trader, as he had feared, but the chatter of the crew suggested that it was known to be one of his ships. Denric Zane had been doing quite well for himself while Kyrus was stranded on Denku Appa. It seemed he had wasted Wendell's time in obscuring the glow his weapon and armor gave off in the ether. It was good to know he was up to such a task, since circumstances might call for it again if they were to encounter gifted Twinborn. He had wondered if Zane would have been so eager to engage the ship, had he seen Brannis there, looking just as he had during the Battle of Rainsdark. The crew of the Fontenue stood back from the railings as the pirate's grappling hooks took hold and lashed the ships together. Brannis had been pleased at how well trained they were and how smartly they snapped to obey his commands. It seemed that some men, either by selection or training, were malleable in the hands of a man who took command as second nature. The sight of him towering over them in his golden armor and carrying a massive broadsword could only have helped his cause. As the first of the pirates swung themselves over the railings, Brannis gave the signal to attack.
"Get them!"
he shouted, had little time to prepare more elegant signals or tactics. 20 fighting men, most of whom would not have been described as such by any commander on land, faced 4 times that number of hardened killers. But the Fontenue had its secret weapon. Brannis met the advance head on. He hated killing men. Goblins and ogres were different enough that he could turn off that portion of his mind that could empathize with them, at least long enough to cut them to pieces in the heat of a battle. For all their monstrous actions, Zane's pirates were still flesh and blood, not so dissimilar to his own. He thought back to the wall at Rainsdark, when wave upon wave of goblins and their wolf mounts swarmed him. The torrents of blood and gore had washed his blade as Avalanche smashed through them like they were merely glass pitchers filled with the stuff. Not wanting a reprieve of that scene, he pulled his blows. He swung lazily at his opponents,
sweeping them before him with an irresistible force. Invaders were knocked to the deck with broken bones, or forced over the railings and into the warm waters of the southern Katamic Sea. Some were slain, surely, but none so gruesomely as he knew his sword was capable of. The fighting spread as Brannis's presence was not ubiquitous. Wherever he fought, the defenders prevailed. Elsewhere, the pirates were advancing and gathering their strength. Men of the Fontenue died, perhaps valiantly, but they were dead all the same. The well-scrubbed wood of the deck pooled with blood. Brannis saw that his gentle tactics were going to get his new comrades wiped out. He saw one man about to be run through, and bisected his attacker with a quick swipe of avalanche. He winced at the gruesome mess it caused, but knew it had to be but the first of many. From the quarterdeck of the Merciful, Soria watched the battle along with Captain Stalgert, her eyes fixed on Zelisan, following him as he waited his turn to make the crossing. She saw him standing there, his unease at going into battle unarmored, clear from his demeanor. She felt a pang of guilt.
If I trusted that the three of them could ensure Stalyard's cooperation, I could have gone myself.
She knew better than to trust any pirate, especially one she had so badly threatened, to keep to any bargain without a figurative blade to his throat. She was the only one who she could be certain could keep one there. On the poor, defenseless merchant ship, the crew was being overwhelmed. They had one warrior among them, who seemed to have anchored a portion of the defense, but he would not be enough, it seemed. Zell had made the crossing, she saw, when she sought him out once more. He held his blade bared, but had not made any effort to engage the crew. He looked around, searching for any sign of Kyrus Hinterdale. Suddenly the battle took a turn. The bulky, clumsy warrior became an agent of death itself. His cumbersome blade, which had seemed so slow as he waved it before him, cut through the air with the speed of a whip. Blood flew, and bodies were torn asunder. The oncoming pirates took notice and tried to keep well back from the knight, whose golden armor had begun to peek from beneath his coverings as his movements came quicker and more sweeping.
"What sort of fiend have we cornered?" Stalyard wondered aloud, watching the slaughter of his men even as they took over much of the deck by force of numbers. Those odds were steadily declining, however, in the face of their devastating opponent. Soria did not answer. Her heartbeat quickened in her chest, watching the movements of the knight in the golden armor as he tried almost single-handedly to fight off the whole of the boarding party. She had seen a slaughter like it once before, watching the fighting on the wall at Rainsdark. She had been much farther away then, but the scene was eerily similar. It did not yet register with her that Avalanche ought to have been safely sheathed at Brannis's side back in Cadrus. She had heard the tale of it being lost along with Brannis's suit of armor in his incident, but she had been distracted by too many other things to give it much thought. It did not even occur to her at that moment that she was looking for a shy, bookish scrivener who had developed a talent for sorcery. She could only think one word, and it came to the fore as she noticed that Zelisan was caught in the path of destruction.
"Brannis!"
Soria shouted as loudly as she could. Brannis blocked off the part of his heart that cursed him as a monster as he ended life after life.
"Innocents or pirates, men must die this day, and I can see to it that the choice is just."
Blood sprayed, and entrails sloshed about the deck in a wet, sloppy mess. He wished he was Kyrus, that he could just lift up the pirate crew and hurl them 1,000 paces out into the Katamic. The pirates were not retreating yet, as such, but they were fleeing his path. Wherever he turned, pirates suddenly tried to be elsewhere. Their stumbling escapes might have been comical in other circumstances. Brannis continued to find where pirates were pressing the Fontenue's remaining living crewmen and to lend them deadly aid. He took any pirate who came within reach of his blade and saw to them along his route.
"Brannis!"
The cry carried over the sound of the battle.
"No, it could not have been."
But it was. He knew the voice too well.
It played itself over and over again in his mind as he recalled his happiest memories. Brannis scanned the pirate's ship and saw a female figure, clad in armor, standing near the ship's wheel. He also saw a familiar pirate, one of Zane's men, Rabono Stalyart. The two were arguing, or at least carrying on some heated discussion. From near his feet, and just shy of being cleaved in twain before he had heard his real name called out, one of the invaders spoke to him.
"Grand Marshal," the man spoke in Kadrin, "we were looking for you. Juliana was."
"Fall back! Everyone return to the Merciful,"
he heard Stalyart's voice ordering. Battles broke off as Stalyart's men obediently began an orderly withdrawal from the ship.
"I am Varnus Coldlake, captain of the Archon House Guard. Around here they call me Zelasan, or Zell,"
Zelasan continued in Kadrin, smiling as he regained his feet.
"She goes by Soria here, but I rather think she would not mind you calling her Juliana."
Despite the press of bodies as the Merciful's crew swarmed the railings back to their own ship, one person managed to fight through the tide of bloodied men and make the trip the other way. Brannis had just enough presence of mind to return Avalanche to his sheath before a leaping Juliana, or Soria, crashed into his arms. He caught hold of her by the waist, noticing as he did the toned, muscular physique and the slightly more drab auburn hair, as well as the fact she seemed a bit heavier than the Juliana he had last held in his arms. But it was the eyes that removed every bit of doubt from him. They were eyes that he could see any time he wished, just by closing his own. They spoke not a word, but their lips met. A hunger, left too long unsated, found a feast spread before it. There was no force in all of Tellurac that cared to keep them apart. Brannis lost himself in memories of kisses they had shared in another world, in a small, sheltered corner of it that had allowed them, for a time, to see a future together. That future had been snatched from their hands, their destinies rewritten by whatever force had seen fit to allot the dragon share of the twin sources to Kyrus instead of Brannis. If men watching from the deck of either ship had felt inclined to hoot or call out or comment upon their bared affections, they kept it well to themselves. They had seen the blood of too many of their fellows gushing forth in the wake of those two. And though their eyes might only have seen one another, all others could not help but notice the wash of gore and flesh they stood amid.
"You have no idea how much trouble I went to find you here," Soria said, beaming when drawing her first breath while parted from Brannis's lips.
"You have no idea the lengths I have gone to be here," Brannis replied. "I think we will have time aplenty for tales, though. Which ship will we be taking?"
"Whichever we want, of course," she said, then smiled lopsidedly.
All seemed to have been put to rights in her world. There was no problem that seemed to matter any more. All would be fine with Brannis around. Brannis looked at his cards and found them worthless. He threw them into the middle and took up his tankard in their stead. The ale that Stalyart kept aboard was top tier, much better than Zane had kept on his ship. Brannis considered for a moment that Kyrus's palate might have different tastes than his own, but decided that Stalyart just had more class and a better appreciation of strong drink. It had been Brannis who had pointed out to everyone that they really ought to be in charge of the disposition of the ships instead of Stalyart or his crew. The Fontenue had been sent on its way with generous reparations for the damage and casualties they suffered. Coin could not buy back the lives of the men who perished, but it could make their widows comfortable and allow the captain to hire on new crew. Stalyart had been irritated at the loss of so much of his ill-won treasure, but seemed to have known he had been let off lightly by Soria and her friends, who had been more concerned with swift transport than with justice.
"So, Captain Kyrus, where are we heading off to?" Tanner asked.
Brannis had learned that Tanner's twin was one of his officers, stationed off in Naran Port. To the best of his recollection, he had never met him before, though with the size of the army, he could not be expected to know everyone. He made a point to look into the service record of Tanner's twin, though, both to check the character of Juliana's companions
and for possible promotion. It was always good to have loyal men placed well. Brannis chuckled.
I am not captain. I just happen to have one under my boot for now. Sorry if I cannot be a bit more accommodating, Stalyart, but last time I was on a ship with you, I got marooned. This was nothing personal, I assure you. Captain Zane was merely wishing to avoid bloodshed, Stalyart responded.
Being good sports, they had allowed the captain and his first mate into their game, a man by the name of Crispin.
His own, no doubt, Zelisand commented.
Not Varnus, Brannis knew. The old guard at the Archon estate had been a familiar face since Brannis had begun visiting Juliana at her family's home when he was courting her. Varnus or one of the other guards often accompanied them when they went riding, if they had not snuck off. Sorcerers might have been untouchable in the Empire, but their children still warranted protection from kidnappings and such when they traveled alone.
We will sail for Tecalia, then I think we can give Stalyart his ship back, assuming no betrayals between now and then, Brannis said. He looked around the table for signs of disagreement, but found none.
I will ensure he complies, Rakashi commented from his post by the door. The Tekalish warrior disdained games of chance, but chose to stay close by his comrades.
He knows I can find him in Vaedras.
Tiba, you wound me!
Stalyart feigned indignation lightheartedly.
You know I keep to my word when I give it. I am just a miser of promises, so I have few to keep. I swear I will not harm any of you, or take you anywhere but where I am instructed to go. I am no fool, and I wish my ship back. See that keeping promises runs both ways, Tiba, because I have friends in Vaedras too. Remember who Captain Zane really is.
Stalyart grinned. Should we be talking about this in front of this person? Wendell asked, indicating Crispin. It was an unwritten law among Twinborn, as all laws for their kind were, that matters of the other world were kept well away from the ears of the one-worlders.
Bah! Crispin is my half-brother. He has heard all this talk. It is so much gibberish among madmen to him. Besides, who would he tell that would find any use from such tales?
Stalyart said. He seemed far too at ease for Brannis's liking, considering the circumstances.
I call, Soria commented, bringing attention back to the game at hand. She was well into her third tankard, and her eyes spent more time aimed at Brannis than the cards.
The needs of their circumstances aside, Brannis was feeling much the same. Juliana had always been a proper young lady, elegant and refined, with an acerbic tongue and a wild streak kept carefully in check among polite company, which, Brannis had noticed, she did not consider Rashan to be. Soria was that wild streak unchecked. While Juliana took her adventures in small bites, rides in the countryside, hanging about in dockside taverns, Soria was living the life he could only imagine Juliana wished she could. It agreed with her. Her slim body was toned like a dancer's, her skin lightly bronzed. He liked her hair cut short, though it would take a bit of getting used to the color. He knew Juliana kept hers up with magic like nearly every sorceress. Soria's color was likely what Juliana's would have looked like if left to its own ends. There was an ease about her manner that Brannis only occasionally saw from Juliana, when they had been free of judgmental eyes.
"Where's the head?" Brannis asked, realizing he had taken too much ale and needed to relieve himself of it.
Stalyart frowned skeptically, as if the question were ludicrous.
"To the bow. That is where we keep the front of the ship, before you ask that, too."
Brannis excused himself from the table, where his small pile of Cadran coins had nearly run itself to ruin. Kyrus had not been much of a crackle player, but at least he was able to cheat to win. Brannis had just been guessing at the game and staring into Soria's eyes over his tankard. Rakashi followed him out of the captain's cabin, where they had been playing. Brannis did not know what to make of the Tekalish twinborn, suspecting that he was not fighting for Cadran on the other side, and likely allied against them. There was an odd separation of politics between the worlds that he was going to have to learn to understand.
"Sorcerer Kyrus, a moment, if you will," Rakashi asked politely, putting a hand on Brannis's shoulder.
Brennus had changed out of his armor once it was clear that Soria and her companions had the ship well controlled. Thus Brennus could feel the warmth of the man's hand through the fabric of his tunic. I am no sorcerer, but of course. Just a moment first. Brennus returned from the head to find Rikashi staring out at the twilight sea. There was a calmness about him that almost seemed wistful. Kairos knew little of the ways of the Tikalish, warrior scholars, and Brennus was finding this one an intriguing introduction to them.
Kairos, you are a man known to many on the other side. You have a reputation, even among your enemies, you know, Rikashi began. I would know what kind of man you are, and your intentions as regards Soria. Are you the warlock's thrall, or just a man fighting the war his people find themselves drawn into? Are you the sort of man who gets rescued by a pretty girl and takes her to your bed? Or do you truly care for her? I am not blind. I see the looks between you.
I am Kadrin. I take on the burdens I am given. As for Juliana, I have loved her since I was a boy. Beyond that, it is our own business. I think here, away from Kadrin politics and meddling, that bit matters, to me at least, and I suspect perhaps even more so for her.
The door to the captain's cabin opened, and Stalyart and his brother emerged. Stalyart once again looked irritated, though being put out of his own quarters seemed enough of a slight to warrant it. Close behind them followed Zelisan and Tanner. Wendell emerged a moment later, carrying his hat in both hands, piled over with coin. Despite making him play with his sleeves rolled to the elbow, and half of the players having ether vision, the street magician had cleaned them out. Soria was the last one remaining within.
Kairos, I think you know as well as I what she has in mind, Rikashi commented. But for all her bravado and swagger, I very much believe she is a maiden. She does not let men close to her. If you are not gentle with her, we will have a quarrel.
Brennus smiled wistfully at the cabin door, left slightly ajar in invitation.
We have played this out once before, she and I. I think your reminder might better have served her ears than my own. She needs no protection from me.
When the door to Stalyart's cabin closed behind Brennus, a crude, hastily scratched ward flickered to life, ensuring their privacy for the evening.